This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You can walk in someone's story. Just make sure that you don't step out of your own story to be in theirs. So yes, you can give your friend the compassion and understanding that they need when they've said or done something that hurt your feelings. You can definitely do that. Just make sure you're not abandoning yourself to soothe them.
I'm Doug Bopes, personal trainer, best-selling author, and entrepreneur, and I'm on a mission to help others become the best version of themselves. So I'd like to welcome you to the Adversity Advantage podcast, where we will help you use obstacles, failures, and setbacks to give you that edge needed for success. I'll be interviewing people from all walks of life on how they overcame trials and turned them into triumphs. So please sit back, relax, and get ready to be absolutely blown away by some of the wisdom and stories you're about to hear.
Welcome back to another episode of the Adversity Advantage. I'm your host, Doug Bopst, and today's guest is Dr. Nejwa Zabian. Nejwa is an activist, an educator, a speaker, an author, and a relationship expert. She began to write in an effort to connect with and heal her first students, which were a group of young refugees, but found that she was also writing to heal herself. In her first book, Welcome Home, she presented a guide for people to become a safe space for themselves, to see themselves through their own eyes, and to leave self-abandoning patterns behind. Today on the show, we discuss the risks of keeping a toxic person in your life, what a toxic relationship will do to your mental health, the difference between a bad partner and a toxic one, three tips for dealing with toxic people, the signs of a toxic friendship, why people repeatedly get into toxic relationships, and so much more. So let's get this conversation going and welcome Dr. Nejwa Zabian to the Adversity Advantage podcast. Nejwa, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so happy to be speaking with you again.
Likewise, I'd love to jump right in. What are the risks of somebody keeping a toxic person in their life?
What are not the risks of somebody keeping someone toxic in their life? I think we underestimate how much damage being in a toxic environment or relationship or any kind of bond, we underestimate how much it actually affects us. But I always think about it like, if you have a flower and you put it in soil that's poisonous, obviously the flower might not see directly how it's being impacted, but it's showing in its growth. And that's really what happens. Sometimes toxicity stunts our growth. Sometimes it stops us from realizing our potential or how much more we could be doing because we are so consumed with dealing with the symptoms and the side effects of what this toxicity is doing to us. So among the risks I can think of that are like more realistic, more day to day, are you are being pulled away from your authentic life because there's a part of you that's constantly trying to make a sense of something that is outside of you, that's impacting you. Maybe you're spending so much time trying to figure out what it is that you can do or say or how you can behave or what changes you can make about yourself or your appearance that would make that toxicity less toxic or that would change that person or how they would see you. That's one thing. So it's affecting you at your core. Right? That's one risk. Another risk would be thinking of all the things that you could be doing with your time outside of trying to navigate this toxicity. It could be that, you know, there's a program you want to pursue in school, or maybe you are in a program, but you're not able to perform nearly as well as you are able to perform just because you are so sucked in by something else. One of the things that comes to my mind also is your literal appearance changes when you are in a toxic environment or if you are in a toxic relationship. Your features change because there's so much turmoil going on in the inside that you're not able to attain that inner peace that would allow your body to focus on being healthy and projecting peace into the world. Those are just a few.
And I think you hear the word toxic a lot, specifically when it comes to like romantic relationships. Taking this one step further, imagine somebody is in a toxic relationship with somebody. And I want to define toxic here in a second, because I know that that word's become desensitized because it's used, I think, so much now. But for the sake of our conversation here, imagine somebody is in a toxic relationship for years. Imagine years go by and they are looking at themselves in the mirror. They're sitting around with their thoughts. What do you think is going to be running through their mind if they've been in a scenario like that for a long time?
Well, first of all, I think if they're looking at themselves in the mirror after being in a toxic, poisonous environment for so long, they have a hard time seeing themselves. They see a version of themselves that has learned to adapt over time at seeing themselves a certain way. Like, instead of being able to see, let's say at your core, you're a very kind person. When you look in the mirror after years of being in a toxic relationship, you don't see that you're kind. You might see that you are someone who tries to project an image that you are a kind person because you have hidden intentions, because they fed you that message for so long. And it's not like you were given that message on the first day and you accepted it and internalized it. It came to you in little doses over time, with every interaction where you were made to feel like your kindness wasn't real, or that you had hidden intentions anytime that you tried to do something good. So you start internalizing that over time. So there's like a blurriness, and I've written about this in both The Only Constant and Welcome Home, where there's like a veil that's between you and who you are. And that was constructed by the messages that you received from this person or the world around you that have told you time and time again and have confirmed for you that who you really are on the inside, who you know you really are on the inside, is not who you really are. And over time, because you've depended on them maybe for love or for belonging or for inclusion, you have submitted to these messages that they've given you so that you could keep that bond.
And so the word toxic, I think, has gotten thrown around a lot, specifically over the last few years. And I think, obviously, there's toxic people, there's toxic relationships, no doubt. But I also think people can use that word to deflect, you know, some of their behaviors, some of their actions in a relationship that didn't work out. Because given what people know about somebody who's toxic, it's easy to say, oh, that person was toxic. And then what does that do? It immediately points the finger at the other person and not themselves. So you've been talking about this for a long time. Like, what truly is a toxic person? And what's the difference between somebody who's toxic and just somebody that wasn't a good match for somebody in a relationship?
Obviously, incompatibilities happen where two people just are not on the same level of communication. They don't view the importance of relationships in the same way. You know, for some people, their biggest priority is their job. It's not their romantic relationships. Whereas another person in the same relationship could view love and belonging and connection to be the priority. And so sometimes there's incompatibilities, but I define toxicity in a relationship as it's when you are not allowed to be your authentic self. When you are not seen, heard, valued, and loved for who you are as a person, you have to filter yourself so that you could receive from them the approval that you're looking for. So it's when we use the word toxic, we're not necessarily describing the person who is treating us a certain way. We are describing how their treatment is affecting us. So if I'm feeling like my true self isn't welcome, like I have to pretend to be someone I'm not, or I have to project myself in a way that doesn't really resemble me, I have to put on a show, then that person and that relationship are toxic to me. And I know some people listening might think, well, what if that's just a self-inflicted thing? Like, what if you, the person who feels like you can't project yourself authentically, what if it's all in your head? Well, that's different. We're not talking about that. We're talking about being in an environment where you are told and made to feel very clearly that anytime you project who you really are, that something is wrong with you and that you need to cover that up and put it away. This is not the time or place for it. Anytime that you express yourself, you are being criticized on your tone. You are being criticized on the timing of bringing this up. You are being criticized on just the whole thought process behind it, or you are being told that there's no basis to what you're talking about. So there's a difference between that self-inflicted feeling like, oh, I can't be myself because if they finally see who I am, then they're going to abandon me. There's a difference between that and really knowing that and seeing it and experiencing it. And when you find yourself over time trying to, I'm going to give you an example. Notice your body language when you are around people who truly love you and care about you versus your body language when you're in this toxic environment or relationship. Because often what happens is when you're around people who love you, you're sitting comfortably, your back is straight, when you speak in the tone that you always speak. Whereas you might find that when you're in a toxic place or you're speaking to a person who is toxic to you or whose treatment is toxic to you, you might find that you lower your voice quite a bit. You might find that your back and your shoulders are caved in because you are feeling like you have to make yourself smaller to fit. And that crushes you over time. If you feel like you really need to condense yourself or dilute yourself or hide so many parts of yourself. So that's what I would say comprises toxicity. But to put it in one sentence, a toxic relationship is one that does not see or hear or welcome or love who you authentically are as a person.
I feel like this can often sometimes get confused a little bit with somebody who's just not secure with themselves, because people who aren't secure with themselves will try to fit into boxes. They'll try to please other people. They're afraid to authentically be themselves as well. How can somebody, if they're listening to this and their first thought is, oh, I'm in a toxic relationship, but they also want to say, well, I want to make sure that before I label this relationship or label my partner, I want to make sure that I'm actually feeling secure with myself and that I'm not just projecting some of this into the relationship. How can somebody tell the difference?
I think that they would need to communicate and say, this is how I'm feeling, and see what the other person says. And you'll know when it's something that's just coming from inside of you, or if the other person is intentionally trying to make you feel that way, because you get that validation from them. You know, I see a lot of advice out there that's toxic, I think, that tells you things like, you shouldn't try too hard to know where the other person is, because if you do, then you are showing that insecurity of yours to them. But then what's the purpose of being in a relationship if that person isn't seeing every part of you? And I'm not saying communicate 100% of what goes on inside of you. No, I'm saying the things that pertain to the way that you feel in the relationship itself, you absolutely should communicate that with your partner. And if you feel like you're not getting the answers that you're looking for, if there's still a lot of confusion, then you have to go back to yourself and say, Are we on the same page? Do I feel like we are on the same page in this? Because sometimes you are way more in it than the other person is, and that's why they don't know what to tell you in return. They might say, oh, well, this is too far ahead for me. So I think I would like to hear a certain example of what you could bring up, what kind of insecurity you could have, so we can discuss it.
Oh, I mean, I think one of the things that came to my mind was, let's just say somebody is questioning whether or not they're in a toxic relationship and they're in a place where they've just started recently dating again. They're unsure of themselves a little bit. They've kind of been shaken up from the relationship space. And maybe there's something in their past. Maybe they cheated on their last partner. Maybe they had some trauma as a kid. Maybe they, you know, aren't making as much money as they want, like fill in the blank. And they're afraid of openly sharing that to their partner. And then in many ways, we can self-sabotage in those situations and say, oh, like this person's not going to get me. This person's not going to fully understand me. And then they don't end up saying anything anyway. And then the relationship falls apart because that other person found out, you know, something from their past in a way that wasn't communicated to them directly. And then, you know, somebody else gets blamed. So that's, I guess, I think a pretty decent example of how that could play out.
I think it's very important when you are entering a new relationship and you have a certain kind of past that you pace yourself with how early you tell the other person everything about you and ask yourself, what is my intention in doing so? Is it to build connection or is it to protect myself from further pain in this relationship, right? Many times we overshare to get the other person to empathize with us and feel like we are, you know, we've been through so much that we deserve their love or we deserve them to show up for us in a different way. And sometimes, and that's protective as well, because we feel like if I say all of those things, then I'm in control of the situation. Then I know that they know everything about me. I have nothing to lose. And I know that I don't have to live with this on my own. That's very protective. The kind of advice I would give someone in a situation like that is make sure that from the beginning, you're not 100% pouring yourself just into this relationship. I would say spend a lot of time tuning in to how you're feeling on your own and with this person. Because let's say you had a certain past where someone cheated on you, and your body has stored the way that it felt in that past relationship, and it will know when there are signs that it will happen again. So instead of trying to tell everything to this new person so that you can say, well, now they know this, they know what hurts me, they're not going to do it, you can say, I'm going to see how my body feels around them and trust that maybe I can't control what they choose to do to me. Maybe I can't control that I won't be hurt in that way again, but I know that I can control the way that I respond this time. Maybe this time, instead of staying and blaming myself for what happened to me, I can verbalize and express that that wasn't okay and move forward with my life, right? So I would say, spend a lot of time going inwards, spend a lot of time understanding yourself. And in that way, you know that you're not building another relationship based on a trauma, you know, that you're not contributing to building a trauma, a new trauma bond with a new person. So that, you know, I always tell people, like, if you, let's say you leave a toxic relationship and you don't change anything in the way that you spend time with yourself and in the way that you practice being aware of the way that your body reacts to things and all that, you're going to get into another one. And it's I'm not going to say it happens 100% of the time, but if your body has spent X number of years being attracted to certain people, that's not going to go away on its own. It's going to require you becoming aware of what your traumas are, you becoming aware of what are things that trigger you, what are things that make you hold on to someone. And many times those things are toxic. Like, how many people will hold on to somebody who ignores them all the time? And it's not because, obviously, when you think about it logically, they're not holding on to someone who ignores them because they love being ignored. They're holding on because they're trying to change a belief about themselves that says, you don't deserve to be responded to. You don't deserve to be prioritized. And they think, if I can change this person, I can change this belief about myself. So you need to take the time to get to know yourself after you get into a relationship like that. I always think back to there's a scene in Eat, Pray, Love. And I know I've read the book as well, but I think more people can probably think back to the movie where it's closer to the beginning of the movie where Liz has that breakdown right after she files for divorce and she gets into another relationship and she's talking to her friend saying, I want to travel. I'm going here and then here and then here. And then her friend tells her, you're like, that's crazy. Just go see a therapist. And then she says, ever since I was 15, I've always been in a relationship with a guy or breaking up with a guy. I've never really had time with myself. And that was really the first time that she decided to have time with herself. And for those who've read the book and watched the movie, all of the relationships that she had been in were toxic in some way. And once she decided to take the time to be with herself and learn about herself and trusted in the unknown and allowed healthy love to come in, that's when it came in. So that would be my advice, is spend more time with yourself. And then when it comes to you communicating with the other person, like with a new person that you're with, then you know I'm not coming from a place of trying so hard to protect myself from future pain, but I'm coming from a place where I'm trying to actually build a healthy connection with this person.
Why do you think that people are attracted to toxic people, given what we've just discussed and the fact that we know that they're just so dangerous for our well-being?
I truly believe a big part of why people go for toxic relationships is unresolved childhood trauma. Obviously, that continues into adulthood. I know many people listening think, wow, you can't tie everything back to childhood trauma, but it's the truth. You and that younger person that you were are the same person. You just grew into who you are right now. So if you've left that person behind and didn't resolve what they went through, you're dealing with it. So I would say, think back to the stories when you were younger where you started forming certain beliefs about yourself that relate to this toxic love that you are being attracted to. So in Welcome Home and The Only Constant, actually in The Only Constant, I went much deeper with my life, which as I was writing it, I remember telling myself, I can't believe like you're doing this. And I was doing a lot of voice to text. So I felt like I was really having a conversation with myself or with a therapist, somebody who's listening, somebody who cares about me. And then afterwards I would read it and I'm like, I can't believe I'm writing all of this. And then I told myself, well, you don't have to fully make up your mind about whether you want this in here now or not. You're still going through the editing process, blah, blah, blah. And then by the time it all happened, I said, I do want to keep it in there because I want people to know that you lead by example. So I went back to stories I had shared in the past in previous books and went even deeper into them and shared a lot more about how those stories have impacted me now as an adult. Like from my own experience, being attracted to toxic relationships came from a place of never feeling like I deserved to be prioritized when I was younger. So the moment that I felt like I had somebody who prioritized me a little bit more than people in my past did, I saw that as, wow, Like, that's huge, you know? When I was younger, I didn't really have anyone to want to spend quality time with me or go on drives with me or go explore new places with me. I never felt special in that way. So when I found someone who was willing to do those things for me, it's like I overlooked the core or the foundation of who that person was, and I valued these little crumbs that I was getting.
What was the turning point for you?
The turning point, I would say many turning points happened in my life. Healing isn't linear, as you know, and it's not like the scene at the end of the movie where you realize everything and then in 2 minutes your whole life has changed. It's not like that. It's like you have many epiphanies and many turning points, and then at some point the sum of all the changes that those turning points have created inside of you propels this beautiful future version of you into action. That future version being someone who is healed enough to look at toxicity as a turnoff, as opposed to being an incentive or a sign to try harder. So one of the turning points I had, I wrote about this in Welcome Home. It was realizing that the pain that I had carried since I was 7 or 8 years old, of that, why can't I have that story? Why can't I have the love, the belonging that all the other kids around me have? Realizing that that pain had been stored somewhere in my body and I hadn't released it, and that it was my responsibility to release it, and it was my responsibility to be there for my younger self. That was huge. And then going through somatic therapy was extremely life-changing for me. So I started somatic therapy after writing Welcome Home. So I decided that I was going to document all the changes that were happening inside of me as I was going through that experience of tapping into my body. So one of the stories that I talk about in The Only Constant is, it was one of my very first therapy sessions, okay? And I was telling my therapist, I'm struggling with the difference between what I know on a logical level and what I end up doing. And I judge myself because I think to myself, I know that this environment or this relationship is toxic for me. Why am I staying? It's like I'm choosing to stay, and I judge myself. I tell myself it's your fault. It's like all the voices outside of me have now been internalized. All the people who tell me you're choosing this, it's like I believe them and I judge myself so much. And my therapist went quiet for a little bit and she said, okay, but have you ever considered that it's not just your brain that makes choices, your body also makes choices? And I was like, it honestly felt like, I'm sure every person has had an experience like this where like I left my body for a little bit and then snapped right back in. Like everything was clear. It's not just our minds that make decisions. Our bodies make decisions. And our minds might make decisions based on what they know. So do our bodies. If your body knows unconditional loyalty, which means it doesn't matter what this person does to you, you stay, then that's what your body's going to do because that's what your body knows. So going back to all of the unresolved and unreleased trauma responses from younger years and taking the steps to actually release those trauma responses was a huge turning point for me. So I understood and learned that if you were to look at the cycle of trauma, so imagine a circle and, you know, there's an event that happens and then it triggers some kind of a response within you. There needs to be a release for that response. It could be anger. It could be sadness. It could be expressing yourself in some way. It could be seeking shelter somewhere. It could be any kind of response. But what happens is after that event happens and it elicits a response in your body, that response isn't released. It's stuck. A, because you were younger and you didn't have control. You didn't have the ability to say, I am safe in my anger. I am safe in leaving or walking away, because you physically need that shelter and you don't know any better. So that trauma response gets stuck in your body. So that cycle has just partially been completed. It's incomplete. And so that response got stuck where, yes, you may have felt like you needed to do something, but you couldn't physically, or you didn't think that you had permission to, or you were just too young. You didn't know any better. And so when the same kind of event happens in your adult years, you will get stuck at that same place. And it's the kind of feeling where, for those listening, if they are finding it hard to relate to this kind of like abstract explaining, I would say, think of the times when you feel like your knees are shaking, like you were about to say something and then you just, your knees buckled and you couldn't even move. Think of the times when you really wanted to say something or do something or get up and do something, but you felt like your body was sinking into the couch. Think of the times when you were about to respond in a certain way and your heart just started beating so fast and you felt lightheaded. Those are all ways that your body is telling you we are in danger. We don't feel safe expressing what it is or doing what it is that we really want to do in a place like this. And that goes back to what your body remembers from when you were younger. And if anybody read Dr. Gabor Mate's When the Body Says No, or The Myth of Normal, or Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score, you know this. Your body remembers things that you might not be conscious of. And so when you learn to tune in moments where an event happens and there's the thought or the idea of a response comes in from your inner authentic self or your adult wise self or your future self that says, this is what we need to do right now. We need to get up and leave, or we need to say this, or we need to enforce this boundary. That thought might come to you and then your body says, nope, we're not doing that. That's very dangerous. We can't do that. And if you don't listen to your body, you're not going to know that that's what it's saying to you. You're just going to feel the response happening or the lack of response happening. So when you tune in and you learn that you're no longer the 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 year old that you were, or 2 or 3 year old that you were, or 14 year old that you were, you're no longer that person who's dependent on others to come and save and protect you. You are now the adult who can step in and protect yourself. And you have the ability to trust yourself in saving that younger part of you. I'm getting goosebumps saying this. That's when you have to decide that you want to be that protector for yourself, and that fear that was internalized in your body as a result of what happened back then is valid. So yeah, I know that was a long-winded answer, but a huge turning point for me that really brought me back to myself and into believing that I could lead myself into the authentic life that I want was learning that my body makes choices just like my mind does, and that it is my responsibility to bring both my mind and body into alignment with each other, so that my mind isn't judging my body for the choices it's making, and my body isn't judging my mind for the choices that it's making either.
Before you had this turning point and you started to embrace the mind-body connection, were you displaying toxic traits yourself in romantic relationships? I get asked all the time how I keep my jawline looking so fresh. I've got two words for you: Clearstem Skincare. As you may recall, Danielle Granich, aka the Acne Guru, is one of the founders and was recently on the podcast. She and Kaylee Christina, who's a holistic nutritionist, teamed up to create Clearstem Skincare. Their mission is to bring you the best anti-acne and anti-aging products without those common nasty side effects, and most importantly, not messing with your hormones. Their formulas win award after award, and they truly work. I can speak from experience. I've been using their Vitamin Scrub, Cell Renew Serum, and Hydro Glow Moisturizer daily for months, and I've definitely gotten way more compliments about my skin since using it. So if you're interested in learning more, visit clearstemskincare.com. Again, that's clearstemskincare.com. And if you decide to purchase something, be sure to use my code Doug for 15% off at checkout. Now back to the show.
For sure. I mean, I'm sure I was like, but I always tell people you need to go back to your intention of what you're doing. So if you're, you have to give yourself the compassion and understanding that you would expect someone else to give you. So let's say an example is blowing up your partner's phone because you are feeling triggered that they might abandon you, that maybe they're out with somebody else, that maybe they're talking to somebody else, whatever the reason is, right? I've been that person. You have to ask yourself, is my intention behind blowing up their phone to control them? Or is it to soothe that inner part of me that's truly freaking out, that's truly panicking, that's truly scared? There's a difference between both intentions, right? And you'll know when you ask yourself. And there are people out there who will blow up their partner's phone in an attempt to control them. So then when I started learning that I needed to look at the root of it all, that's when I was like, okay, I understand that the actions that I did, the impact of them was hurtful, and it was maybe to a certain extent disrespectful or displaying lack of trust. I understand that, and I can take responsibility for that, and I can apologize, and I can work to make that better. But I also want to honor the part of me that's saying, hey, this body of yours has lived with you much longer than this person has. And this body has alarms going off all over the place. It's trying to tell you something. You need to listen to it. So there's a balance that should happen there. And that's what I started doing to understand my own behaviors that displayed themselves in a toxic way and maybe hurt someone else. But I will tell you that every single time that I've been triggered to display that kind of toxic behavior, at the very end, it turned out that my gut was trying to tell me something legit. And it always brought me back to the fact that I need to trust myself, that when I feel that something is off, it is off. I need to pause. I need to not gaslight myself out of the feeling that I'm having. Because again, and I cannot stress this enough, close your eyes and imagine this, whether you're listening or you're watching. Close your eyes and think of the fact that this body that you're in right now was there with you since the moment that you came into existence, since before you can remember. This body of yours knows what's dangerous. This body of yours knows what betrayal feels like. This body of yours knows what lying feels like. This body of yours knows when someone is judging you, knows what those things feel like. So when you're in a place where, let's say you're going through something in your relationship where you have this gut feeling that something is going on, you can't pinpoint it, you can't find the actual evidence that proves that this is actually happening, don't dismiss your feeling just because you can't find the actual evidence. Trust that your body has wisdom that your mind hasn't caught up with. Trust that your body is trying to tell you something that doesn't necessarily need concrete evidence. It knows. So I'm not saying 100% and 100% of the time go to the conclusion that your body's trying to tell you, but I'm saying pause and listen and make sure that you are attuned to the way that you're feeling moving forward. Is this feeling staying? Is it lingering? Is it continuing to knock on my door, or is it just was it just a, you know, a fleeting thing that came and then I could find physical evidence around me that disproved it, and I could say, okay, well, maybe it was just it was a false alarm. But just it pause and listen.
Talk a lot about friendships and who you spend time with on the podcast, and I would love to talk a few minutes about toxicity when it comes to friendships.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I think this is something that is so important, because if you have people in your life that are bringing you down and that are constantly complaining, constantly shooting down your goals, your dreams, or making fun of you, like, you will be miserable. So talk a bit about the signs of a friend that may be toxic.
I actually shared a story in The Only Constant. So I talked about losing my grandma and the grief of it all and just how that hit me and it changed so much for me in my life. And I spoke about a friend who reached out to me during that time, not knowing that my grandma had passed away. And then she got upset with me for not responding to her. And I think only a couple of days had gone by or something. And because I was in that space where, you know, I had just lost someone that I loved so much, someone who her love could never be replaced. And here I am in a place where a friend of mine who's supposed to be, you know, one of my the closest people to me, who knows so much about me, instead of giving me the benefit of the doubt that maybe I didn't respond for a couple of days because I was busy doing things and that it wasn't my intention to not respond, she immediately went into attack mode. It was interesting because that was the first time that behavior of hers really became very clear to me that it was and not the right kind of friendship for me. But because of that clarity I had in that moment, it all the other moments in the past with her in particular, where she was displaying that kind of behavior, came back to me. And it was like, oh, she's always been like this. I just didn't see it because I always diffused the situation, because I always responded on time, because I always accepted her invitations, or because I always showed up exactly when and how she wanted me to. And so that brought to me my past patterns of being a people pleaser, and those patterns were still kind of current in my life, but I didn't see them that way. I saw it more like, I'm just a kind person. I just don't like hurting people. But to be honest with myself, which I had to be after this life-changing event happened where I lost this huge love that I had, this huge unconditional love that I had, it put into perspective all the other relationships and friendships that I had in my life. So I would say, if you're thinking about your friendships and you're wondering, is this healthy for me or is this toxic for me? Just ask yourself, does this person show up for me in the way that I need them to show up for me? Is their love and support for me dependent on what I do for them, or when or how? Do they truly see me and my successes without needing me, for example, to fit into a certain box in their life? Like, do they see my successes and who I am as a person outside of them saying, well, I associate to her, therefore I associate to her success. Like, I have somebody in my life who's this successful and I have somebody in my life who's achieved this. Like, do they see you as your own separate person who doesn't just make them look better, right? I think a lot of people can relate to that, because sometimes when you go through tough times in your life and you lose certain things, whether it's money or you lose a certain status that you had or job that you had, you'll notice many of your so-called friends will no longer be there, because part of why they associated with you was that they associated who they were to who you were. So I would say, ask yourself those questions, and also ask, whether they have your best interest in mind, or is it 100% their own best interest in mind when it comes to this friendship?
I think at times as humans, we can be harsh with stuff like this and be very black and white and say, okay, I heard this podcast, this person, they might have like said something to me in a way I didn't like a week or two ago. I'm just going to cut them out of my life because I heard this podcast or read this book. And I've certainly made that mistake before when I was younger, when I got really passionate about personal development, and I would just kind of cut people out of my life. And not to say that you shouldn't do that in situations, but I also, now that I'm a bit older and more mature, been like, you know, like you should have had more compassion for people in those situations. You shouldn't have been so black and white. You should have had some nuance in the situation. That being said, is it possible, not necessarily to change a friend, because we can't change people, but to have like a positive impact and be able to have a conversation with them and say, hey, listen, like, you know, I really value our friendship. I've known you a long time. Like, how can we help a friend be a better friend?
Communication, using I statements, always coming from a place of, you know, I felt this way when you said this or when you did this, instead of throwing accusations and saying your intention was 100% to bring me down. And you will know when you speak to a friend of yours if their intention actually was to bring you down. You will know, because if you are expressing to them how their actions made you feel or how their words made you feel, and they stick to what they said, knowing that it has no validity, then they are choosing to stick to being right over sticking to actually hearing you and listening to you. And that could very well be the way that they are with everyone in their life, but you still have the ability to choose whether you want a friend like that in your life or not. And just because they've been there for so long doesn't mean they have to continue being there, right? Many of us hold on to past friendships just because they've been there for so long, but you always have a choice. And again, this was a huge revelation for me as well. I wrote about it quite a bit in The Only Constant. You can walk in someone's story, just make sure that you don't step out of your own story to be in theirs. So yes, you can give your friend the compassion and understanding that they need when they've said or done something that hurt your feelings. You can definitely do that. Just make sure you're not abandoning yourself to soothe them. Make sure that you can stay grounded in your story, in the truth of who you are and how you experienced what they did or said, while you are extending that empathy and understanding to them.
My audience loves takeaways, and I know that you speak a lot about change and how to embrace that. And I think one of the biggest changes somebody must make in the situations we've been discussing is how to stand up for themselves in situations that we've talked about. Whether you feel like you're in a unhealthy or toxic relationship, whether you have friends in your life that are bringing you down and you want to be able to make sure that you're not being a people pleaser and being a doormat. If you had to leave the audience with like three tips, three different things they could do to stand up to somebody who's toxic and stop being a doormat, put somebody in their place if they're mistreating them, what would they be?
The first thing I would say is, obviously, you are on this journey of changing and making the changes that not only you want to make in your life, but the ones that you need to make to live an authentic life. So the first thing I would say is, don't negotiate your change with people who want you to stay the same. Don't negotiate your voice, what you have to say. Don't negotiate your feelings. Don't negotiate your actions with those who want you to stay the same just because it serves them in a certain way. I think that's a very important takeaway for any person who's looking to step into that authentic version of themselves. And to make that leap, to make that change, you have to change the audience that comes to your mind every time you think of taking that leap. You have to shift your focus from all the people who don't have your best interest in mind to those who want you to fit into a certain box, to those who want you to keep a certain bond in a certain way, where you're constantly being pulled and pushed in a way that only serves them. To do all of that, you're going to have to stop thinking of them as the main people in your head. Think of, I guess we'll go to the next point, which is think of the people who do support and love you and see you for who you are as a person, because that's going to be your new support system. Those are going to be your new people that you fall back onto. Those are going to be the people who are your mirror, who are going to reflect back to you who you actually are, not a condensed or blurry version of you. And you know who those people are. And if you've always been attracted to people who put you down or who are toxic to you, it's going to feel extremely uncomfortable to go for people who are actually safe for you. Which will take me to my third point, which is go for the kind of safety that isn't the protective kind of safety, where it's like, I need to protect myself. So I will be quiet. I will mold into whatever version of myself I need to be to fit into this environment. I'm going to go into a form of safety that allows me to be myself and to be vulnerable. Those are two different kinds of safety. Safety that protects you from danger, and safety that welcomes you as you are and welcomes your authenticity and your vulnerability. So those are the three pieces of advice that I would give. Don't negotiate your change with people who want you to stay the same. Change the people that you look to as your supporters and as people who see you and hear you and love you for who you are. And go for environments and people who are safe for you, not in the protective kind of way, but in the way that is safe, where you are welcome to be who you are vulnerably and authentically and openly.
What's been a big change that you've made in your life over the last year that's really been transformative for you?
I've been spending way more time with myself than I ever have before. In that space, I've been working on navigating through the discomfort that comes with being alone and with feeling lonely with myself. Like, it's gotten me to question why it is that for so many years of my life, I've opted for environments and people who have just kind of like accepted me in and tolerated me, as opposed to just spending enough time with myself where I could build my true identity of who I really know I am and who I really believe I am, so that I could step into environments where arms are wide open for me. I would say that was a huge thing for me this past year, spending more time alone. And yes, I got the phone calls that were like, why aren't you answering? And yes, I got the texts that said the same thing. And why am I not seeing you more? Why are you? And it was always a shock to so many people when I said, I didn't feel like talking. Like, what do you mean you didn't feel like talking? It's like, it made it very clear to me. We just talked about friendships and how you know that maybe a friendship isn't good for you, or a relationship, or a family relationship, whatever the relationship type is. The response that you get sometimes shows you that some people think you owe them to pick up the phone, whereas some people in your life are just so happy and grateful that you've picked up the phone. And if you didn't, they don't take it personally.
Given your work and what you talk about, do you find it challenging to date?
I think it's challenging, yes, because there's so many ways out there now, especially with dating apps, where people can project an image of themselves that isn't actually who they are. So it takes some time to really figure out whether a person is being honest or whether they are just saying what they know that you want to hear. And I think for me in particular, it's a little bit of a struggle because so much about my life is out there. So it would be easy for someone to be like, oh, I know she likes this, and these are topics that she likes, and this is something that she mentioned somewhere that I know I need to just plug in there. So there, it is a challenge, but a challenge doesn't mean that it's bad. It just means that instead of looking at it as, oh, I should just settle, I can say, well, on to the next person.
Like, what's something you wish people knew more about when it comes to like the real you that they don't see online?
This is totally unrelated, but I did write about it in The Only Constant. It's, I have a hard time seeing myself as someone who has fun, because I was raised in a way where I needed to be mature at a very young age. And so sitting for hours and doing nothing, like, we don't know what that looks like. Or learning how to dance. Like, I learned how to dance over the last couple of years. And the biggest challenge at the beginning wasn't learning the dance moves or being able to follow certain steps. It was shaking out of my body this belief that I am not somebody who dances, because I associate dance with immaturity or with seeking attention. So I really have a hard time doing things just for fun, because I've been conditioned to believe that it's a waste of time or that it reflects badly on me.
Where's that conditioning come from? Does it come from your childhood, or does it come sometimes from the self-help space where?
Oh, no, from my childhood, definitely. I think the self-help space has become very good at encouraging people to just spend time doing nothing and to enjoy life and nurture that child part of you. It's definitely from my childhood conditioning that I need to be mature at all times, that I need to be using my time for productive things like school and work and community work and just working on being really the best good girl I could possibly be. And so I've changed a lot of that conditioning over the last few years, especially the last 2 years of my life. But I will tell anyone who's listening, it is not a flip of a switch. It's not as simple as knowing it in your mind and being like, okay, well, I know that this is the right way to live, that I have the right to enjoy my time, that I have the right to choose not to do anything for a day. And then you just, it's not like that. You have to work through the blocks and barriers that have accumulated inside your body that tell you, like, we're not comfortable not doing anything right now. We need to get up and do something. So you need to sit with that agitation that comes with you trying to do something for fun that you didn't feel like you had permission to do in the past.
You spent a lot of time alone, you said, recently. What's the biggest battle you have with your inner voice?
The biggest battle I have with my inner voice is believing it, because something transformational happened for me where the inner voice went from being, this would have been about 6 years ago, I would say, becoming aware of my inner voice and how negative it was and how it really didn't stem from me. It was from all the voices around me growing up to that point in my life that had just convinced me that something was wrong with me and I didn't deserve love and I didn't deserve prioritization and all of that. Once I became aware of that voice, I started working on nourishing my own voice. And over the last couple of years, doing somatic therapy has really woken me up to my inner wisdom, my authenticity, my true self, and what she's trying to tell me, not only about myself, but about my experiences. And so because I had spent like 27, 28 years of my life believing all those other voices, now that my real true self voice has come up to the surface, many times I listen to it and then I'm like, you really need to believe what it's telling you. Like, I know you couldn't trust that the voices from the past, but this is a voice that we need to trust. So many times, because this inner voice at many points comes at odds with what the world is trying to tell me about myself, I have to believe in it enough to say, this is the true voice that I need to be listening to.
Najwa, thank you so much for your vulnerability, for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge. I think the audience is going to get a ton of value out of this conversation. If people want to connect with you, if they want to buy your books, if they want to follow along on the on your journey, where's the best place to do that?
Well, you can get The Only Constant, which is coming out March 5th, wherever books are sold. And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Threads. It's just at Najwa Zabian. And I also have a YouTube channel where I put so much content on my social media. But if you would like to read my books, they are almost wherever you can find books.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much once again for coming on the show. The audience, like I said, is going to enjoy this one and appreciate you being so vulnerable.
Well, thank you for giving me the platform and thank you for exposing me to your audience. And also thank you for holding space for me to be this vulnerable. Because, you know, I don't always feel this comfortable when I speak to people. So give yourself a lot of credit for the kind of safety that you offer.
Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate it.